And you've been stung badly. These are lessons. These are disappointments. But they are not beyond that which you can grow. You'll all be very happy now that the word has come down from Air Force pilots right up at the level of the presidency, who, when asked about Gunther Rusbacher, said, "Stay away from him. He is totally dangerous. He is a contract con man." Now, what the soup do you think that means? Exactly what it said. He is paid off to be a con man and suck you in. Well, is Ron Jackson going to fit that? I don't know, and I don't care. Because my relationship with Ron Jackson is between me and those he claims he knows. I don't even care if he doesn't know them. That is the conduit I have chosen, and they have accepted. So you better believe it, I want him out of there. And there is one thing about him that all of you had better notice. He does not longer tout weapons and wars, nor patriotism. He says we will regain our republic. He listens. And that is a sign of wisdom. He may not like me one iota, and believe me, he knows me. That is an advantage that everyone sitting here says, "Well, I wish I had." No, you're not going to have that privilege. We have a job to do, and if we can't do our job, it's like God. If you cannot be godly without seeing a visible show and tell, then you're not going to make it anyway. We have to make it on the basis of what is and what must be accomplished here. We have to trust one another enough to be dependable. But you don't have to be in this town to pick up the telephone and call, and you're a valid human being. And you don't need any more problems. And that's what it would be. What time is it?
3:00.
In 4 minutes.
I want a bunch of reports. Let's have cake, and then I want to hear about the common law possibilities. I'd like a little bit of an update for John, although I'm not letting John off the hook. John allowed this to happen. He even contributed to it. And everybody is doing all they can, John. You've got to stop focusing on self and consider the problems that these other people are having shaking this thing out. We must go beyond self and assume our responsibilities. Or for goodness sake, say, "I can't handle it. I've got to have help, or I will step down," or whatever you see. But there is not one person that cannot assume the responsibility that they've accepted. Not one. But there sure does need to be some shoring up. And we have to be grateful for that which others are willing to give and share with us. We certainly don't go about picking at them. So let us gorge, I guess. I don't know what word. Dorma says, "You've been so hard lately. Can I just be fat one more week?" Oh, dear ones. Dear ones. Let's take a break.
This is after the break. This is after the break, and we're ready to resume.
Thank you. I appreciate your being patient. It's nice to be able to visit with some of the ones that are your closest family and friends. And some come from great long distances just to spend a few minutes with us. You're lonely. Some of you recognize it. Others of you don't know what's the matter. You're lonely. You want to do your job. You're overwhelmed by the task at hand. You wonder, where were you while all this was happening and you couldn't see it? You were seeking. And you sought in so far all of the wrong places if you haven't been here. It doesn't necessarily mean that this is the right place. But the soul of man is lonely. You're aliens in this place, and I mean it in every sense of the word in which you can define alien. We can trace where you were before you came here. We can trace you all the way back to when man first came onto this created illusion, the stage on which you now play a role. You can even understand it. You can reason with yourself, but the mind cannot truly comprehend it. So you have to pass on, hoping enough information will come into your consciousness to allow your consciousness to know what your soul knows of your source, your attachments, your infinity. If you are the thought of God, which you are, acting in manifest form, His thought on your stage, which is all there is, every thought expressed is but a memory. Again, in every sense of the definition of memory. Whatever I have just uttered is gone. All you can do is restructure it in your mind and hold it in your memory. But you have an amazing capacity and computer system. Nothing presented to your consciousness or your subconsciousness is lost. It's recorded. And that of soul is recorded on a bigger computer. And yeah, we could just drift right off here into La La Land and talk about Ashtar and the computer system and the Akashic Records. And we could go on and on into the religions of the Far East and the gurus and the swamis. But that doesn't solve your problem. And you can giggle over ETs only to come to learn your lessons, and you will find that it's easy to manufacture from DNA structuring genetically altered human beings. Easy. And that should scare you, because these are the big, deep, dark secrets. And because they are big, deep, dark secrets, you know they are adversarial secrets to keep you and your soul goodness from again crossing that boundary and back to your realization of who and what you are. So some of you have to keep coming back, because in each experience, God not only projects a thought, a screenplay, but there have to be the teachers, the guardians, the guides. And you're not given any privileges. Ones who are given the privilege of being able to see and know usually either cut out and go home because they understand. You see, once a being that makes it up to that kind of understanding is immediately in the other dimension. That's what that kind of understanding means. Once you know you are automatically out of here. So you nice people said, I can do it, Dad. Here am I, send me. But you forgot, didn't you? And yet not a one of you would trade it in. I'm sorry, don't lie to me or yourself. You would not trade it in. You want it different. You want to run it. And you want to do God's work by God your way. And you come right up here. And first you got to get through a 12-foot commander. It has to be so. Mr. Bright said it was. It doesn't matter if I'm a flicker in your thoughts, does it? We have a job. I don't like to consider it a job. Every problem has a solution. Every game is a challenge. Every play has its characters and its role, its plot. And as you get to be better actors on this stage of manifestation, then your roles become more and more responsible. And to you experiencing, it may not seem so. It may seem like, well, then why am I not President of the United States and I could really fix it? No, you wouldn't. You would become President of the United States and do the same thing. Oh, not me, sir. Oh, yeah, Peter. I heard you say, not me, sir. I won't deny you, sir. No, not more than every 5 minutes. It's okay. Sometimes that's the intelligent approach, isn't it? I expect you to be intelligent and act with wisdom. Not be a mouthy show-off. Some jobs seem more important at a given point. But no job is more important than any other. Looks pretty good, Dharma writes. Well, I want to tell you something. She could have 20 million pages of work stacked all over everywhere. And it wouldn't be worth a plug nickel to anybody. We have to have a team. And I do not care whether you consider your little role important or unimportant, menial. There is no such word. Each person does according to what is necessary. And maybe you never get to that big role you thought you came for. But if somebody does not take the papers over to the mailbox, and it's happened out here in this little town where the delivery people just was storing up all the mail. There is no unimportant task. Not one. And when you see an opportunity to function somewhere else for expression, experience, do it. Take that moment. You're not settled in to the guillotine yet, so why stick your neck over there? But that does remind me. You're going to reenact the French Revolution. They've already brought, they being your adversarial enemies for your terror, have brought in guillotines and they're going to put them in these concentration centers. Now, you tell me it's worth it to go out there and wave your gun and burn your flag? You're going in those centers if that's what you do. Why give them that opportunity? keep your mouth shut and do something. That's what pays off. Yes, you need to make a stand, and yes, you need to make a demonstration sometimes. But you don't make a big show with adjutant generals running around wrapped in the flag. That is an insult. Certainly not intelligent wisdom. Now, it would be nice to be able to snap our fingers and say, God will fix it. No, you've got to ask the way, and you've got to blunder. And then you have to regroup and maybe blunder again. Because you have to remember something. The odds against you are pretty heavy. Although the real perpetrators are only less than 5% of the entire population of the world. And you're getting right on to 7 billion people now. Most sound asleep. Absolute pawns tossed on the seas of others' wishes. Brain dead, mostly. I would like to say sleeping, but that's no longer true. Literally, brain dead. There is no incentive for life, and yet your dimensional needs request that you live in this ongoing and ever-increasing violence. That's the only way you know you have even been alive, is that adrenaline that pumps in case you get shot. Well, why invite the bullet unless that's your intent? We can build. And sometimes it takes years for the entire cycle to make its way back so that even the players can see that now is the opportunity. Now. It wasn't over here back then. It has finally worked around to now. And that means we have to begin to lay a foundation while the iron is hot and people will let us do it. Because you're at a time of great change where a little bit later is going to be too late. And I could insult Gene by saying he needs no introduction. But he deserves an introduction. He has worked at this for years of his life, dreaming of this. Because he knew at some point he needed to do this. And there comes a time when it's convenient. And then there comes a time when it's a little interesting. And then there comes a time when, oh God, I've got to survive also. And then there finally comes a time when you know you're going to do this. And other things have to take a second place to my need to do this. He's going to tell us.
I have a lot to tell.
Well, we have a lot of time to listen.
All right. First of all, I want to make sure that I learned this system very well. Because if I read the commander correctly, I don't think EJ is going to be in this position much longer. And I might be in a position to replace EJ there. No.
You've heard of blind.
First of all, I have a couple guests here that I'd like to introduce. Vernon Epstead and Linda Warren. Would you stand up for a few moments, please, and be recognized? Okay, thank you. They have several reasons for being here. One, of course, is they want to find out why I'm so interested in being in Tehachapi. And they heard about the common law court. And between these two ladies here, they have many, many, many years of administrative experience in putting on seminars throughout the country. They were very, very successful and making a very, very good living at that, doing that type of work. And they want to volunteer to get this common law court administratively put together if we need their help.
I don't think if is a good word.
And I can say that that from the putting together standpoint, that is done. The common law court is ready to become a reality. It just has to be explained to the person who it has to be explained to and has to get the approval. And we are ready to put that into operation. And I don't know, I'm sure everybody here doesn't know what we've accomplished. We have accomplished something that the people of the United States have been looking forward to for more than 100 years. We have put together a way for a common law jury in civil trials, no judge, no person there in a black robe, just two people telling their story before a jury, and the jury not confined by instructions of law, a fully informed jury, and with a decision that will be fully acceptable and enforceable by the present day traditional courts. We have put together a masterpiece. We are going to be in competition with the traditional courts, and they're going to love us after they find out how we are going to benefit them and the taxpayers. Okie dokie.
Now let's have the truth.
That's the truth. That's
the truth. He is an attorney, you know.
These two also expressed an interest in seeing Sandy and her baby. I have warned them that that's the ugliest kid in the world. And I know ugly kids. I've raised 8 of them. All right. John Schofer. Let me start talking about John Schofer. Now, before I talk about John Schofer, let me clear up some very nasty rumors, and Patricia wants me to clear up these rumors first. There is no truth to the fact or the rumors that you've been hearing that Patricia and I are going to elope. None.
It's not the way I heard it, but
that's an attorney's right.
Tuesday morning of this week, I was fortunate enough to have breakfast with John Schofer. And I noticed that John was very, very depressed. And this is a complete turnaround because for the last 3 weeks he'd been up. So I asked John what his problem was, and it turned out his main concern is getting his car back. So I promised John at that point there, I said, John, I will get your car back. I'm not going to see you in this down position.
I'm going to interrupt you right now before you get to the punchline. John, what would you do with your car if you had it?
I'd get a driver, a person to help me, and I'd go see my boy.
I'm going to hold you to that. Because I hear rumors also. If I had my car, I would. You will not until you are fully authorized by law to get in that car and drive it.
I have to do that. I don't intend to break any laws.
Good, because everybody in here has their neck on the line, and especially Gene Dixon.
True.
So go on, Gene, please.
Thank you. So I called Larry Cox to find out what was the holdup. And I reread to Larry Cox the last paragraph of the order signed by Commissioner Ryan on the 15th of May. And that last paragraph says that John O'Connell, the conservator, is charged with the responsibility to recover the assets of John Schofer. And in particular, to review and investigate the prior former conservators, Rod McBroom and Eleanor Schofer. In talking with Larry, he told me that in the last desperate act that he had called John O'Connell and said, John, I'm not having much luck with Gooden. Would you please call him? Are you on friendly terms with Attorney Gooden? Would you please call him and ask him to please bring down that car so it can sit in front of John's house and John can look at the car and do whatever he wants, hop in, hop out of it, have it there so he can physically see his automobile. But he says, would you call John O'Connell and see how he's made out in his discussions with Mr. Gooden? Well, I called John at his office over here in Tehachapi, and he was not there, so I got his Bakersfield number. I talked with John O'Connell in Bakersfield, and he told me that, yes, he had called Gooden. And Gooden had said, yeah, I can bring the car down. I can have the car brought down. But he says, why do a useless act? He says, we're going to be in court in a few weeks. Now, this was when they thought the court, I think, was going to be the 20th, and just before Commissioner Ryan continued it to the 20th of July. Commissioner Ryan, on her own, because of her tremendous workload, decided to continue John's hearing from June the 20th to July 20th. And there's nothing the attorneys can do about that. When the judge says that her work is, she's overloaded, that's it. I mean, that's the final word. So he had a conversation with Mr. Gooden, and Mr. Gooden says, and by the way, he says, John's not going to get that car back. He says Rod McBroom is going to end up with that car. So I told John O'Connell, I said, John, you write down. I said, did you write this conversation down when it happened? He said, no. So I said, right now, you take pencil and paper, and you write that entire conversation down, and you send it to me as fast as you can. I then called Larry Cox, told him what had transpired, and we are going to bring both Gooden and Rod McBroom in for contempt. And so far, as of this date, they have not even supplied the court with the court's demand for mileage on the car, who's got the insurance on the car, where it's located. They're in contempt with all those orders. So that's what's happened in John's case. Now, John has a tremendous personal injury case, what we call a tort case in law, against Rod McBroom, against Eleanor, and possibly against the court. The court was made well aware of the fact of John's predicament way over a year ago, way back in 1993, and the court took months to respond. Courts can be sued, and it just might be that there'll be an added defendant to this particular case, hopefully along with Mr. Gooden.
And Mr. Abbott.
And Mr. Abbott. Mr. Abbott does get involved much later. It's kind of interesting.
Sue them all.
Good attitude, John.
Spoken like a good attorney, John. I mean, looking for my job now. Okay, okay. All right, on the gold case. We now have Mr. Horton totally boxed in on the gold case. Mr. Horton has no further ways to turn. We have shortcutted the procedures in the appellate court by filing a motion to dismiss, taking advantage of Nevada laws, what's called sections 41B and section 3AA, which says that he has no capacity, a trustee, which George was found to be and claimed to be, and became when he accepted a gift for somebody else. And the court made a proper finding there. A trustee has no capacity to appeal. He's not an interested party. And that's what we have thrown before the court. And Friday was the last day for Horton to respond. And as late as 5 o'clock Friday, I hadn't heard that any response had been filed. I don't know of any response that he could file. And hopefully the court will respond quickly to that motion. And hopefully that Mr. Overton's gold will be released for the purpose that he intended it to be released. It's been a tough fight. On the Abbott lawsuit, many of us here are involved, named individually in the Abbott lawsuit. We have filed a motion to dismiss in that particular case because I think it was in January or February, because there were out-of-state plaintiffs involved in suing and filing a lawsuit in the state of Nevada. We were able to demand that they post a security bond on behalf of the defendants. They had 20 or 30 days to do that. They failed to do that for some 67 days, and we filed motions to have them dismissed and thrown out of court now. In talking with our attorney last week, he sent me down a brief, and basically it was in response to a brief just received by George Abbott. George Abbott failed to direct himself to the issue and be apologetic to the court for not filing his security bond within the 30 days. There's a total, I think, of 91 days before he got it filed. He was not apologetic. He was not remorseful. He did not give an excuse for getting permission from the court for filing something late. Instead, he turned around and attacked about everyone down here individually, including myself again, and went on into a tirade against all of the individuals involved that he had named in the lawsuit. Completely missed the issues and was a perfect setup for our filing a reply, his reply, and say, look, Your Honor, all he's done is put in a bunch of BS, has nothing to do with the issues, grant us the motion. Unfortunately, our attorney got carried away with his enthusiasm, himself forgot to direct himself to the issues, and responded to all the BS. Wait a minute. So I had to call him up. I said, look, let me talk with you as a father to a son, as a teacher to a pupil, and as your best friend. Now that you've got that off your mind, please throw it in a wastebasket and go back to the issues. And this is the type of working relationship that we have with this attorney. He thought about a few minutes. He says, you know, he says, you're 100% correct. And so that's what he's done now. So that now that has to be filed tomorrow. So I'm under tremendous pressure to get stuff finished for him, which I'm going to fax up to him in the next four or five hours. And hopefully we'll have that filed tomorrow. On the George Green bankruptcy, I've been in contact with the Justice Department, Alice Emmerich of the Justice Department, for the George Green bankruptcy filing, because his total filing was an absolute fraud. It was a fraud perpetrated by the bankruptcy courts, and they can be very tough, and so the Justice Department is reviewing that bankruptcy. We were complimented, the Law Center, with the help of everybody here. We sent about two three-ring notebooks, six inches of documents to Alice Emmerich, who is a paralegal for the Justice Department. And she complimented us, and she mentioned that she had never, ever received so much assistance from anybody in reference to a case. She had passed the matter on to her superiors, and hopefully they'll take the proper action against George Green. I know coming down here very early this morning, I was lamenting the fact that I had to get out on Sunday and go work so hard and so early. So I left the house about 7:45, and as I drove out the ranch, I noticed to my left, all the Inses were out in the field already working and picking up weeds. No, but I heard your curses as I went by. I should tell you the terrible penalty I paid for being down here. Just 3 years ago, if everybody remembers, when I came down here, I had a thick head of black hair.
You think you have it bad. Look at Overly.
Overly and I have a lot in common, right? let's see. Now, That's about where I can, unless somebody has some specific questions about everything. The legal situations are turning around as we more or less predicted a few months ago, and we're gradually catching up with the bad guys. It's like playing them chess. We're just putting a squeeze on them and squeezing them more every time, and it's just a question of days before we nail them. Any questions, anybody?
Good job.
Oh.
Does this bring about a hearing on the the stuff on my car, the custody of it, or is it still a dead issue?
No, John, I can tell you all about that. And I gave a copy of that court order to Paul to give to you, and I'm sure that Paul did, didn't you, Paul?
Not yet.
my right-hand person here. Only because he's on the right hand.
You should have depended on your girl Friday.
John, the last paragraph of that order is a very compelling order. That's basically a recognition by the part of the commissioner that there has been a lot of wrongdoing in your case, and that wrongdoing is attributed to the former conservators Rod McBroom and John and Eleanor Schoeffer. They are designated now and directed to review everything that has happened to you, make the full report. You're going to come out of this smelling like a rose, John.
I hope so.
You just hang in there. Keep improving.
You're doing a good job yourself, it looks like.
Well, right now you have to keep uppermost in your mind the facts and what is and what is being accomplished over here that you think is not being accomplished at all. The more these ones do not meet their obligations to that court, the worse standing they get. You can't drive that sucker if you had it. And you don't need it, even if you had it. You think you do. You want it.
To drive it. I want to go down to Bakersfield once in a while.
Do you think you can't go to Bakersfield simply because you don't have your car?
People look at me like I'm kind of crazy if I try to take another car.
I think you said it, John.
No.
They're going to look at you worse than that if you take another car.
I can get a license for it.
Unless you use more reason in your speech and thinking, you're not going to have it.
Just let me not get hung up in all this legal beagle stuff. Wait till the time comes to do it.
That's what I'm saying. Wait.
Okay. So when I come up here and knock on your door, say I want to get a license.
My door?
I wish to have permission to go get a license.
You get a long way to get that.
What I'm talking about, John, is the fact that they get in deeper and deeper and deeper. And if you are ever to be without a car, right now is the very best time in your life to be without it. And the longer they don't produce that vehicle, the worse standing they get in that court. And the more apt you are to recover all of your things. You can push for a car that you can't drive. Or we can let this play out its proper sequence. And they are in trouble. And I can guarantee you that Mr. McBroom is really, really ticked off at Mr. Abbott. Mr. Abbott and Mr. Dixon has copies of all those documents where Mr. Abbott did nothing but get you in deeper and deeper and deeper in trouble and charge Mr. McBroom another $2,500, another $5,000. Surely you're not going to let this stand in our way by not sending me my money so I can go to court and hang you. Rod McBroom has paid over $11,000 of your dollars out of your account to Mr. Abbott. Let this play its way out properly. Then you can join with him and go after Mr. Abbott. Okay. Only he won't have any money. I want to tell you, he's a rip-off artist.
I've got a truck.
But it would be nice, John, if you thought about this. Maybe you could get that entire 551,000 book library of Mr. Abbott and put it in the law center. Is a payoff.
We'll have to see what we can work.
But you've got to be patient and you've got to not do these things.
Well, I've been very patient.
And I'm going to remind you, no, you're impatient and you let everybody know you're impatient.
Do you know how long I was in that?
Do you know how hard people were working while you were in there?
Well, you worked for it and I sweat it out too. Well, forget it. Let's
move on.
Take it up on something else.
Let's hear from Soltech. Come on, you're having shaking, and if Ed and Dorma, get him. He was here.
He left it out.
He's up in the office.
I want to hear.
Soltech is our man.
You're under heavy, heavy bombardment from the woodpecker. There is a massive effort against the United States by Russia right now while you're dealing with this trade thing. These factions are at each other. And that woodpecker system has been in place for a long time, and it is still the most effective low-frequency system. And it undoes most of you. Is there anything else we can talk about?
Do we know about Ron Jackson's video?
Well, probably Rick knows the most about Ron Jackson. So.
And they're both coming in now. We can get both answers at the same time.
There's not an official writing from Soltech this week. Callie's been quite busy with a new job and a job change.
When are you going to start writing and stop dumping your responsibility?
As soon as Callie officially refuses to write anymore. So far, she just argues with me. But there are two or three things happening which are important. Commander covered them quite succinctly in a writing earlier this week, so everybody will be able to read them in this week's contact. He mentioned 3 points which are showing so much increased activity that it's just like a stuck record to talk about them anymore. But one of the three is really getting to be alarming and hasn't been mentioned much. Now, we all know about Southern California and Palm Springs and the ongoing quakes there. And, of course, the new sinkhole in Los Angeles that opened up near Hollywood Boulevard. That's probably more significant than anything. And they blame it on the tunneling underground. Well, there's tunneling a lot deeper than that that's more responsible than the subway.
The entire city structure is sinking.
Yes, it is. And they're not telling you about that. And the things that they can't blame on the subway system, they don't tell you about, since they don't have a ready fall guy for it. The rest of it's much more alarming. It is sinking in places. People called Art Bell's show this past week talking about the bubbling and the heat, the hot water, hot probably sulfuric acid and hydrogen sulfide gases coming up out of the Salton Sea again. They said the Salton Sea looks like it's boiling. And Art cut them right off as soon as they said that. He didn't want to hear anything like that on his program. none of these rumors. But the commander mentioned in this writing this week 3 places. One was Southern California. One was the New Madrid Fault. There's a lot of quake activity going on along the New Madrid Fault, which is not reported. But when somebody calls into a show like Art Bell's show, when we talk about quakes out here, and they say, well, Art, you know, we're shaking here in Missouri, and somebody else calls in Illinois and says, well, we're shaking here, too. And you start to mentally put a map together from the calls that come in, like that, and you see it's all along the New Madrid Fault. There have been 3s, 4s, and even some 5s that aren't reported. And that, of course, is, as you well know, is indicative of some shifting about to occur. But the area that is most alarming to me, and if I were still up there, I would be scared out of my wits, and that is the San Francisco Bay Area. And Commander did mention this in the writing. He mentioned these 3 areas, and that was, to me, the most important as a significant new area, because if you imagine the San Andreas Fault going up, there's a point where they have a whole bunch of instruments. I mean, the scientists are just going hog wild in an area called Parkfield, and it's because it's had a regularity of quake activity in the past, so if you wanted to stick your instrument somewhere where you really felt sure you were going to get some data any day now, and get your papers out of it and get your tenure and all of that stuff, that was where to plunk your instruments down. Well, true to Mother Nature, Mother Nature's now overdue to give them the data they want.
Thank you, Ed.
Well, true to Mother Nature.